Well, good morning. This is Per Fagerang doing Political Perspectives today. And first, a few announcements. Big weekend coming up. Friday, September 9th, Jim Fetzer, founders of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, will be speaking at the Selwood Community Center, 1436 Southeast Spokane. That's Friday from 7 p.m. until 9. Then on Saturday, the 10th, also at the Selwood Community Center, there'll be a continuing education for dissident citizens. That goes from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. And then on Sunday, the 11th, 9/11 Truth has a potluck picnic at Colonel Summers Park. That's at 20th Ave, Southeast 20th and Taylor. And that goes from noon until 5 p.m. Also on September 11th, there's from 2 p.m. until 3 p.m., there's a peace memorial at Lonsdale Square, Southwest 4th and Salmon, and that's kind of across from that ugly Hatfield building. And then, of course, the big event is Sunday the 11th. Mike Rupert will be speaking at the First Unitarian Church, Main Sanctuary, and that is at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6. So you can go to all of these if you want to. And also for tickets, for advanced tickets, you can get them at KBOO or give us a call. So anyway, those are the announcements. Mike Rupert, good morning.
Hiya, Per. How are you?
How's everything down in Sebastopol, California?
Oh, it's just so beautiful down here. I can't believe it. We have food crops coming in everywhere. We're just enjoying this little gift we have of being out of the turbulence and the bad weather.
Right. Uh-huh. What are you growing?
We have about 40 crops in the ground.
Wow.
We have everything from citrus. We have 5 apple trees. But we've got kale and chard and pumpkins and squash and onions and we have everything growing here. It's a perfect place for that.
Oh, wow. Gee whiz. You and a bunch of other folks then, right?
Well, there's 2 other people living here with me on 2 acres. My assistant Max, his partner Danny, and we're building a little community here. And,
well, that's cool.
And it's fun.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know. I got my little garden going. I don't know if I get some tomatoes this year or not. They're green, but with a little more hot weather, they might get some red tomatoes. But anyway, let's start out. This is one of the things that you have said more than once is unless you change how money works, you're changing nothing. So
that's right.
Why don't we? That's the heart of the matter, I think. Why don't we start with that? How does money work?
Well, we live in an infinite growth paradigm. In other words, it is a Ponzi scheme that all starts from fractional reserve banking, the ability of banks to lend 9-10 times more money than they have on deposit, a fiat currency which has no connection to anything real in the world. These are, if you will, almost spiritual binary ones and zeros in the ether that have the power to determine life and death. And compound interest. The only way to satisfy that is to have growth unto infinity. And as I have been saying, I think for quite a number of years now, infinite growth on a finite planet is not possible. And we are awash. We are buried or drowned in the results of that right now.
Well, I think, you know, that attitude kind of made a lot more sense to people, say, over the last 500 years when the Europeans conquered and plundered the Americas, you know, as the riches seemed endless. But now we seem to be coming to the end of a 500-year growth era.
And scientifically, it's been well known. I mean, the pioneers of the peak oil movement, the giants who were involved before I became involved in late 2001, with peak oil were very clear in their statistical scientific analysis. Richard Duncan, who is an Oregonian, he's a wonderful PhD, said plus or minus human industrial civilization is only going to last for about 100 years, and that was a certainty. And all of that stuff that for many years seemed so obtuse, abstract, distant, intangible, is now smacking us in the face every time we turn around. There are limits to growth.
Well, you certainly don't hear that from the politicians. I was just listening to some news this morning. I don't know if Romney was saying, yes, we've got to grow, grow, grow. And he's not the only one. They're all saying that.
Well, every politician now, and I think those lights are going on around the world in this two-party system, is part and parcel owned and controlled and financed and manipulated by the infinite growth paradigm, whose chief enforcers are the banks. We are a government in this country now of, by, and for the banks, not the people. And I don't see how we can expect anything else from any candidate who takes a podium in this system right now.
Well, this is one thing I wondered about. Do they really believe this, or are they just saying this? And if that is true, if they know what's really happening, then they must be making some kind of plan. So where do you come down on that?
Well, the Three Stooges made a lot of plans, too.
Okay.
You know, and I really think, and I've been saying this pretty clearly now for about 3 years, certainly since the movie Collapse was filmed, is that these people are behaving like dinosaurs. They are maladaptive creatures who have no other adaptive response set. To assume that they have some kind of plan that's going to work out is very much like saying that the dinosaurs had a plan about how they were going to overcome massive climate change. In case nobody's noticed, we have that happening too at the same time. Dinosaurs can only do what dinosaurs do, and in the evolutionary model that has governed this planet for 4 billion years, those species that cannot get out of their paradigms are doomed to go extinct. And the idea behind the lifeboat movement, the sustainability movement, transition movement, whatever you want to call it, is to disengage from that paradigm, to become like the first mammals on the planet who were able to survive the last extinction event, and to create distance.
Well, of course, the dinosaurs are succeeded by a bunch of lighter, more agile, more sustainable critters.
Indeed. Ones that choose, as a matter of consciousness, to hold sacred, if you will, not necessarily from a religious sense, but the fact that some things cannot be challenged, who choose to live in balance with this planet and become partners with it rather than adopt the old Abrahamic notion of having dominion and to rule over the planet and all of its life and systems, because we've certainly screwed that up pretty thoroughly.
Well, let's go on to peak oil. I mean, you said that what runs the economy is energy. And we are right now, I guess, I've heard different years, but apparently the oil production peaked, 2005, 2008. It's been kind of basically flat ever since. How long that can go on, I really don't know. But do you have any latest on that?
Well, it hasn't actually been flat. We have a global 9% decline rate.
Oh.
It peaked in roughly November 2005, according to Ken DeFay's, early 2006, according to the International Energy Agency. But what has been filling the gap has been, if you will, what the press loves to call oil, but it's actually a serious deception. What's been filling in the ever-widening gap is tar sands, natural gas, liquids, and all of these very inefficient, very expensive, very destructive programs to get more things that can be burned in internal combustion-powered engines. When we made the movie Collapse, there were 800 million internal combustion-powered vehicles on the planet. There's now a billion. So we are still in the overgrowth, overshoot mode right now, even as oil supplies are diminishing. And we're seeing the results everywhere, especially in terms of food prices, which are compounded by the absolutely illegal criminal activities of the financial markets.
Well, Cece, another thing that politicians and all these leading thinkers don't realize, they don't factor in the energy in, energy out.
Right.
Equation, and so they talk, well, we've got, a billion barrels of tar sands oil, and they don't realize what energy it takes just to get that oil,
yeah,
plus the energy it takes to clean up the environment, if that's what you want to do. And so you know, that you could apply this to a whole lot of things, like going to war for oil. The war itself may use up more oil than you ever get back. And then because the energy, you know, the politicians are basically, you know, there's all this talk about the budget and deficits and everything. And what they're doing is they are squandering energy in order to save money.
Well, and it's worse than that, because this is where, and this is probably where my life's work has added most to the map that we look at to see where we are now, is that the financial system, the monetary system, is predicated on continued growth. And all these bailouts are debt, which can only be repaid by more consumption and continued growth and more burning of energy, which isn't there. The bottom line to this, Pair, is that the planet, Mother Earth, cannot afford to repay all of mankind's debts. She's refusing. She's not able. And so any attempt, and we're going to be looking at quantitative easing 3 pretty soon here, more than likely, and the British government's about to print again, and Europe is imploding, but they're piling heaps of debt on top of the ones that are already there, and that's what's going to kill everything, because it will be debt that will have tractors and all the things necessary to feed people to keep things running, lying idle and shutting them down. Debt will shut them down while people are starving, and we will see what my grandparents and parents saw in the Great Depression, which is there's food around, there's the ability to not solve but to mitigate these great catastrophes, and debt will make it even worse, because it's more profitable now to destroy things than it is to save them.
Well, maybe the answer is sort of ignore the debt, just seize the real goods and use them.
Well, there is an emerging, like within the last month or so, consensus forming that global debt repudiation will be essential. And it would have to be universal, and it would have to be global for every nation, that all debts between individuals and corporations, between corporations and corporations, all debts to banks will have to be forgiven before we can get out of the infinite growth paradigm. But I have to say in the same breath that unless you do away with fractional reserve banking, compound interest, and fiat currency at the same time, all you do is start the whole madness over again.
Yeah, it'd be like a global jubilee.
Wouldn't that be great?
Well, what about, let's go back into this money. You know, money comes out of debt, and so there will always be more debt than money in circulation.
Yes.
Why don't you, let's run through that.
Yes. I mean, every one and zero that exists in this binary world of fantasy money is a promise. He is debt. That's how it is created. That's how money comes into existence. Now, various experts disagree, but let's say that we have a global derivatives bubble of $1.4 quadrillion. There isn't enough money, of course, to satisfy all that, and that's what's imploding now. That's what's happening in the European Union. That's what's happening all over the planet, because it's not possible to repay that debt. And all the dinosaurs are capable of doing is creating more debt, digging the hole deeper. And that's the thing that has to be broken. That's where I say until you change the way money works, you change nothing, because the way money works governs every other response to every other issue on the planet right now. And nothing trumps it. And yet somehow the human race seems to be psychologically, spiritually, emotionally incapable of even seeing that that's the root problem here.
Well, I guess on a very basic level, say if you go to the bank, you borrow $1,000, so the banker, you know, he just enters this in the computer, puts it in your account. This money did not exist a minute ago. So you come out with $1,000 in your account, but you also come out with, a $1,500 debt.
Yeah. Yeah,
and there's no way to pay it off unless you somehow grow your way. You know, you make enough money to pay your living expenses plus the debt. And this kind of might have worked for the last few hundred years when this country was growing, but it's not going to happen anymore.
No, it's not, because growth. Von Clausewitz said that war is a continuation of economics or politics, by other means. And I have said I've written that politics is just a continuation of economics by other means. But in actuality, economics is only a continuation of energy, the ability to do work by other means. And as you distill down to that, that's where all the lies, if you will, the remainders of long division from the political hubris that's out there, really start becoming something that's in your face, whether it's your pension fund disappearing, your job disappearing, your health benefits disappearing, the social services disappearing, all the stuff that we're seeing right now. And that's the only that's the only way the current system can work.
So how do we finance things without debt?
Well, I'm not worried about financing things.
Mm-hmm.
That's another
issue. Paying for farms or just sort of doing needed work, restoring the environment, growing food, whatever.
Yeah, well, financing, again, a paradigm is what you think about before you think about something. So who says that something has to be financed in the way you describe anyway, with compound interest, with long-term notes? There's a difference between compound interest and simple interest. If I want to lend a friend $1,000 and say, okay, for lending you $1,000, I will take a $100 one-time fee, that doesn't spur the infinite growth as much as it does. But what's very clear is that we're going to have to find a way to get things done without financing, or else we're all going to starve anyway. And this is the big challenge right now, because until we change the way money works, the only outcome for what's coming on here, and I wrote this in an essay many, many years ago, called Global Corp, is that you will see, as the collapse of industrial civilization progresses, more and more mergers, until roughly at the last time, at the last moment, as the last human dies, as the last job disappears, as the last light goes out in the city, some corporate executive concluding the last merger, saying, hooray, we did it, we won everything, and click, the lights go out.
Well, I don't know. It was a Lenin who said, the last capitalist will sell you the rope to hang him or something like that. This is Per Fogring, Political Perspectives, and we are talking with Mike Rupert, who will be speaking Sunday night at the Unitarian Church. And if people want to call in, the number is 503-231-8187. When you look around the world, what do you see happening? Europe seems to be in a very precarious situation. Is that
precarious is not the word. Europe is imploding.
Uh-huh.
We have been tracking this nonstop at collapsenetwork.com, collapsenet.com, which is now probably the most useful news information and analysis site on the planet. We have been very accurately making predictions and forecasts, analyzing events, and being able to tell our members now in 66 countries what to expect next. Europe is dead, and all it's doing now is going through death throes. But the death of the European Union will not only cause enormous financial turmoil there, it will roil the markets here. And really all we're waiting for is somebody to finally say, well, this corpse has been shot 72 times. I think we need to pronounce it dead. But that's going to happen here, and it's going to happen everywhere else. The Europeans are making a huge mistake. Angela Merkel Sarkozy in France and the other big leaders of Northern Europe are trying to bind Europe together more tightly in a bigger union with more rules, and that runs directly in the face of the law of entropy. Things break down, not up, and it wastes energy to try and make things bigger. It's like I have said for a long time that the United States of America cannot and will not continue as one country, because we are a country that was forged by energy, and that energy is going away. And we see clear evidence of that in the fact that at CollapseNet we told you before Hurricane Irene hit that it was going to be like a Fukushima for America, and it's proving to be that, because FEMA is broke, the National Flood Insurance Program is insolvent. There are people all throughout the areas struck by Hurricane Irene who are complaining that nobody's coming to fix anything. And I saw that after Hurricane Katrina in 2005 when I and my really good friend Matthew Simmons were talking about it. We saw the American empire was dead then. We never fully fixed Katrina. We certainly didn't fix Deepwater Horizon. And now we're less and less capable to deal with these crises. And we're at the point where every state and local government is so stretched that we in the Pacific Northwest, for example, don't want to see very limited resources going to bail out another part of the country that rob us of our ability to take care of ourselves here. I'm in total agreement with Ron Paul. Ron Paul, now I've written a couple of books and I made the movie, and it's very important to reinforce local governments to reverse the economic and political flow of power from the bottom to the federal government and turn that flow around and start re-energizing state and local governments, because those are the last bastions that we have. Those are the last lines of defense that we have to help us prepare for the collapse, which is underway.
Okay, I think we've got a caller on the line. John is on the line. Good morning.
Yes, Mr. Rupert, I really do agree with you that Ron Paul has a lot of good things to say, in particular about winding up these wars and shutting down this nonsense of perpetual war. I don't care too much for his von Hayek based economics, but then, you know, what the heck? I'd rather just end the wars and let other things sort themselves out. As for Europe, what do you think? Do you think the implosion of Europe is directly responsible for the invasion of Libya?
Incidentally, yes, and to a certain degree, yes. I wouldn't say a direct linear cause and effect. Libya was all about oil. There's no question about that. We saw that. After
There's also Gaddafi's proposal when he was right on the verge of doing it, the African gold dinar.
Yes. Well, there were a number of reasons why it became very convenient to get rid of Muammar Gaddafi. Oil, primary reason, because there is the shortage of oil globally is manifest. Oil prices are killing economic activity. There's no substitute. Libya has a very good grade of light sweet crude, which has been contracted mostly to Europe, Italy, France, and Germany, and that's why those countries were behind that. Their contracts have been honored with the quote-unquote new rebel government that has been recognized. Gaddafi also had enormous quantities of gold and deposits in foreign banks, and a secondary reason for that invasion was just to steal his money so that the powers that be could have some liquidity to serve their own criminal financial bubbles. I pretty much considered Libya as kind of like a sideshow that was pretty understandable right now, because I think globally there's much more threatening situations happening around the world.
Well, I agree with you, and it's a little annoying to me. I don't know, probably to you too. It's hard to say all the moral outrage over the guy. I mean, you know, considering all the dictators that are far worse that have been supported profusely over the years.
When we have people like David Cameron in Great Britain shutting off Twitter, Facebook, using social media to go hunt down protesters, locking them in jail, talking about morals, I gag any time I see an elected official or public official talking about morals on some soapbox now. It's just sickening to watch these people do what they're doing.
Yeah, do you think the Chinese and the Brazilians, for example, among others, will have any access to anything in North Africa after this operation?
Well, Russian contracts have been honored. We follow this very closely at CollapseNet on our World News Desk every day for our members. We have a lot of key decision makers from around the world who come there for their briefings every day. Russian contracts have been honored. China has been guaranteed that some of their existing contracts, but it's pretty clear that the West controls that. There were side deals made to let China and Russia go on with the deal, but Libya is not the focal point. Because this is happening in many countries all over the world right now, and I'm much more concerned about events around Israel in the Holy Land with Syria, Turkey and rising unrest in the region after the quote-unquote Arab Spring, where now all of the unsatisfied eyes in the region are turning on Israel. And I'm extremely concerned about that. I'm very worried about a global war.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to worry about there. And, you know, we're all worried. Thanks for your comments.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we have Mark on the line. Good morning, Mark.
Hello. Can I ask Mr. Rupert about what he thinks about Fukushima, and is there enough money, and does Japan have enough money to do something about that? Because it seems like it's a lot worse than the media says it is.
Oh, indeed, sure. It is. At CollapseNet.com, we've been on Fukushima since the day it happened. And 2 days after the earthquake and tsunami in Fukushima, CollapseNet was the first news entity in the world to call for people to get potassium iodide. And here I have to pay great tribute to folks like Zero Hedge and Arnie Gunderson of Fair Winds, a nuclear engineer, wonderfully eloquent, professional human being who has kept a great track of what's going on there. The bottom line of Fukushima is that we have had three core breaches confirmed. One core has melted down through the floor of a reactor building and is moving down toward the water table. There's been radioactive steam venting, which has produced radiation readings in Toronto after a recent rain. We had the video on our site at CollapseNet from a
That's
very
professional... That's another thing. You know, what about, you know, how is this going to affect all of us on the West Coast here? And not only that, but, you know, even in places like Missouri, they're finding radiation in the rainwater.
Well, yeah, I'm extremely concerned about this. First of all, just to finish briefly with Japan, I've said very clearly, and it's documented, that Fukushima is a mortal wound to Japan. Japan is dying. No matter how they tried to hide it, it can't be hidden. We have hundreds of thousands of pounds of cesium beef that's been eaten, food supplies, their electricity, their grid is going down, the contamination is spreading. But in the Pacific Northwest, when our rainy season starts next month, and I'm in Sebastopol just north of the San Francisco Bay, and our neighborhood runs from British Columbia down roughly to the bay. That's the Pacific Northwest. I am extremely worried about high levels of fallout because the United States government does not tell the truth. I hope that's no shock to anybody. The Japanese government does not tell the truth, and we've documented that they're incinerating sludge and garbage that's full of radioactive cesium and sending that into the atmosphere. And the only thing that's spared us to this point is the fact that it hasn't been rainy here.
Well, it's dropping down on them first because, you know, what happens when you burn something. And why they have the tall smokestacks is they calculate the length of the smokestack due to the, you know, but it's going to fall on Japan first and then the Pacific, and then some of it's going to get to us.
And we still have the unresolved core issue that's melting down toward a water table. And I have to be very clear that the China syndrome says, I'm assuming, and I'm waiting for experts like Arnie Gunderson and other scientists to step forward with the hard data they use, that they're trying to cool this core, but they have to stop it before it reaches the water table. Because once it does, if it becomes hot enough, it will split water into hydrogen and oxygen, which
another
is an
explosion.
Explosive mixture.
Another explosion,
Mount Krakatoa.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, thank you for calling. Hey, Mike, there's one thing I wanted to ask you. We haven't talked about it very much, but it's been on my mind a lot, is what do you see happening in Mexico?
Chaos?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't know, where does it lead to? I just, you know, these narco cartels, you know, they seem so vicious. I'm wondering, you know, talking about peak oil, post-peak oil, this is something I've been asking myself about, is what does that do to the drug trade? I mean, it's sort of going to hamper global trade of any kind. Will it localize the drug trade? What do you think will happen?
Well, first of all, let me just say clearly that since 2000, I have been absolutely on the record saying that I am totally in favor of decriminalization. Prohibición. Get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that adds to the criminality of the infinite growth paradigm, and it produces the kind of tragedies that we see. the southern border of the U.S. now is utterly porous. At CollapseNet, we track videos from county sheriffs along border towns from Texas to California, advising their local citizens along the border, you know, arming them and organizing them for self-defense because there is no backup from anywhere in this age of budget cuts. The barbarians are inside the gate. Now, what's happened recently in Tijuana is, I believe it's the Sinaloa cartel. One of the cartels has gained control of Tijuana, and they had big headlines now. Hooray, a whole criminal cartel runs Tijuana and murders have stopped. Let's celebrate. I mean, there's something really wrong with a picture like that.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. I think of these narco cartels as a sort of form of fascism.
Well, that's indeed what they are. And that's what Mussolini said. Fascism should more properly be called corporatism because it's the perfect merger of power between the corporation and the state.
Do you think there'll ever be a conflict between people who want to use land to grow food and the narco gangs that, you know, want to grow drugs?
Well, growing food is, of course, dependent upon whether or not the land you're on is capable of growing food and you have water. I don't think that'll be the case because people do have to eat. You know, there's going to be many other reasons why we have to worry about starvation. The most important trend that I'm seeing is, and it's very clear here in the United States, and again, we've been documenting this on CollapseNet, is the hijacking of food shipments and interstate commerce. And that is becoming, and that will continue to become a very serious problem. Every major city in this country has a three-day food supply. Everything else is brought in by trucks. But the trend we're seeing now, which is very predictable with CollapseNet, is that food shipments are going to be hijacked. The cities are so vulnerable, and that's why, you know, anybody who's followed me for more than 3 minutes knows that, you know, for a long time, the first thing that I will tell anybody to do is start growing your own food.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Political Perspectives. My name is Per Fagrang, and we're talking with Mike Rupert, who will be speaking Sunday night at the First Unitarian Church. Well, speaking of Mexico and the Southwest, you know, I think there will come a time when people will be leaving that area because of drought and one thing or another, and they'll be heading north up to your neighborhood and my neighborhood. What should we do about it?
Well, I don't know that they will head, you know, directly to Sebastopol or Portland. Mm-hmm. They're going to look for regions where they can live.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the zombies living in that region really don't have a clue. It's clear, especially because of the drought stories in Texas, in Phoenix, in Arizona, and Nevada, that those regions are totally unsustainable. They cannot support those populations, and that's happening already where people are going to be forced to move. Most of them will probably blindly go to another big city. You know, the slowest campers tend to want to stay in denial about what's going on. And I'm not terribly worried, certainly not as much as I was 3, 4, 5 years ago, about the mass exodus from the cities to come and try and take food-growing land and fresh water, because, quite frankly, most of the people in the big cities wouldn't recognize an edible plant if they saw one or know how to plant it or take care of it. And I really think that as collapse gets worse, and it's pretty clear, again, we've been covering this on CollapseNet, that the government's plan is just to put rings around the cities and let nature take its course, because they do not have the troops or the police personnel to go in and impose martial law on all the major cities, let alone the whole countryside. So it's going to be catch-as-catch-can and every man, woman, and child for themselves in the region. But I'm not expecting huge waves of people showing up in my neighborhood necessarily or Portland or any other place like that in ways that can't be handled or addressed. I think the big cities are just going to melt down and the zombies are going to probably not even get out of the cities.
Well, I can see the government kind of setting up prison farms, welfare plantations around the military bases. You know, maybe they'll sort of create a little mini empire in San Diego or someplace. But
No, I don't think so, Per, because, and I've said this clearly for many, many years, contrary to the Alex Jones government disinformation, right-wing, anti-New World Order idiot people, I have said very clearly for probably 8-9 years now that there is no plan to build camps for 310 million Americans. It costs money. There is no money. It takes food. We're running out of food. You have to pay the guards. You have to burn oil and gasoline. As Henry Kissinger might say, the thing to do with useless eaters is stop feeding them. What the powers that be did during the Great Depression was not build massive camps. They, you know, they had a few token things. What they did was they created an absolutely poor, desperate, starving, migratory workforce that would move itself from the Dust Bowl of Arizona to California, grapes of wrath, on its own to fight to work for minimum wage to pluck grapes. It didn't cost any money. And that's what we have to look forward to. We are going to be left on our own, and that's why building community and local resiliency is the only thing that's going to protect people from the challenges that are still ahead.
Well, as the price of oil goes higher, do you think the government will ever ration it? Just it seems like they might be forced to.
Well, I'm sure that there are rationing plans on the table. The I think the dominant plan now is just to let price do the rationing.
But it's at some point, like if rich people are flying around in jets and poor people are freezing in their homes, I mean, people might get upset about that.
Well, as I've been predicting, I think we've seen a summer of discontent, and I think that that's going to get worse. Right now, I'm thoroughly convinced, after watching the civil unrest this summer, which we predicted at CollapseNet very accurately, is that what the British government especially and the United States government want is massive civil unrest. They are prepared for that. It is the ultimate distraction, that if they can have some major riots, the people will run to the government, beg for protection, and the government can then use that as a distraction to hide its overwhelming criminal complicity with the banks. And so what I'm advocating, especially for young people, I mean, there's a whole generation now, 30 years and under, who absolutely understand. They have no hope. They have no future. They're inheriting the dregs of human industrial civilization, the debt, the wreckage, the ruin. And, of course, they're frustrated, and they should be. But the longer that they and we, all of us who are being eaten by this, can refrain from massive civil unrest, the stupider the government and the banks look.
I think we have another caller on the line. Joe on the line. Morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention on KABU Radio, on the weekday morning radio zine back in March, it was about a week and a half to 2 weeks after the Fukushima disaster. One of the people on the morning radio zine there at KABU interviewed a couple from a volunteer organization called safecast.org. And what it is, it's a volunteer radiological reporting system. So if you own a Geiger counter or some other radiological monitor, you can go outside your house or your business or wherever you happen to be at the time, and you can take a reading and go back in and put it on the Internet. Now, I've never owned a computer, so I haven't been to the website, but it's safecast.org, and I guess you can check out daily radiological monitoring around the world. And one other thing I found out from listening to Norman Goldman, he was really, mad about this several weeks ago, is he found out that about starting about the last week of March all the way into about the second or third week of April, the whole West Coast just got blasted with all kinds of radioactive crap, from cesium to americium and
iodine, all of it.
Iodine, too, yeah. And one of those isotopes I just mentioned acts like iodine in your body, too. So anyway, so we're getting a double blast of that. So when they were telling us, oh, don't go out and get iodine supplements, you can ruin your health. Well, yeah, if you don't need iodine, yeah, you can ruin your health if you put too much iodine in your system. But they were lying, and lying some more. So they're all a bunch of lying SOBs. And, it's as funny as now and then I listen to Alex Jones on one of the local cable TV stations here, And I've often wondered if whose side he's on, you know, if he's just a propaganda dissemination system for the right wing. But you think that might be the case?
Yeah, but he absolutely is. There's a couple of great points in that. Thank you for all of those points.
Yeah.
He absolutely is. On the CollapseNet.com website, my website, CollapseNetwork.com, we have a video up there now in breaking news on the homepage. Alex Jones busts himself, and I would encourage everybody to go look at that. Alex Jones copies my work and has taken credit for a lot of my work over the years. I absolutely believe he's government disinformation. I've caught him falsifying stories. But what he does is he will adopt 90% of our positions, but not 90%, a substantial part. But Alex Jones will not touch infinite growth. Alex Jones swears that he can prove that peak oil is a fraud. And Alex Jones doesn't believe in climate change. And so he has an enormous amount of money behind him, and he's clearly a madman. There's a video of Alex Jones and his rants showing him disrupting peaceful demonstrations. And that's been the poison pill. Alex Jones has done, I think, is more dangerous than guys like Rush Limbaugh, because he has taken people who have asked questions and misdirected them consistently. But he now stands pretty well exposed as a liar. I have caught him fabricating stories, and he's running out of ammunition. All he can do is scream at the top of his lungs about violence and kill, 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 because that's what he's trying to instigate. And so, you know, the Greek word apocalypse means, when in the original form, the great revelation, the great showing of truth. Who's true and who's not, who's lying and who's not. And I think a lot of that's happening right now as the blinders are starting to fall away. But the problem with Japan, I got to go back there for a minute, is not just monitoring. At Collapse Network, we have an absolutely free Lighthouse directory with 1,600 hand-picked entries, including many on radiation monitoring, how you can obtain equipment at various price ranges to monitor, but also we have excellent work done on herbal and dietary things that you can eat that prevent radiation absorption and help you treat any exposure that you've had. These are all herbal remedies that the corporations don't want you to see. But the problem is not just so much monitoring. We have to stop the Japanese from burning it. We have to stop the Japanese, that's not honorable, from incinerating their waste to sweep it down the road and pass it on to the whole planet. Because, and since we covered this at CollapseNet, this is about 3 weeks ago now, we did a lot of work on that on our World News Desk, all coverage globally of Japanese incineration of contaminated soil and wreckage and everything else has just disappeared. And so we don't know if the Japanese are still doing this. And I'm going to talk about this Sunday at First Unitarian because it is a political issue for the Pacific Northwest. And we know that our government, the U.S. government, is not going to give us straight answers. And we also know that the Japanese government isn't. But for our own collective security and peace of mind, so that we know that come October we're not going to be taking radioactive showers, we need to find some way to communicate with Japan to make them, encourage them to stop incinerating this stuff and sending the contamination into the atmosphere.
Okay, thank you, caller. I think we have David on the line.
Hi, Mike. I appreciate the analysis and the honesty about what's going wrong. You also mentioned, and I hear this frequently, and it seems correct to me, that the solution, at least to economic collapse, is local resilience, local food production. And I'm wondering if you would flesh out with a little more detail your vision of what that looks like and what the transition from where we are right now locally, how do we get to more local resilience, more local food production, a local society?
Well, I'm kind of reluctant to offer my vision. One of my trademark lines is what you need now, what we all need now is not a plan, we need options.
Yes.
Deal with extreme and worsening uncertainties and dangers.
So
to make a plan on, say, we get from here to there by going A, B, C, D, goes right out the window the moment Hurricane Irene or a Fukushima or a Virginia earthquake happens. So we have to prepare and embrace prepare for and embrace uncertainty.
Yeah.
For all of my career and very closely involved with projects like the Zeitgeist Movement. I just had Peter Joseph on my radio show last Sunday. Transition U.S. Movement is extremely influential. Caroline State and the executive director is a neighbor up here. I have many cross friends across transition towns and Transition U.S. and the transition movement globally. Also the Gaian Movement with the permaculture, great giants like David Holmgren. All of those things are extremely important, and that's the first line for what we have to do right now. But I've kind of taken a position, it's very clear with the destructiveness that we see of the infinite growth paradigm, that proactive measures need to be taken to kill the infinite growth beast, because it will not rest until it's killed everything in pursuit of
profit. So what are some proactive measures that you suggest?
Well, first of all, coming from a background of being a cop, my first priority is to make sure that people are safe. So that's, you know, start growing your own food, start preparing to live dependent only upon what's within 10, 15, 20 miles of you. From that point, I have no illusions, and nor do I advocate standard political involvement, signing a petition, having a movement, having a protest. That doesn't do any good. It hasn't done any good ever. And that's a cul-de-sac that won't do any good. Disengaging from the monetary paradigm, killing the beast. And one of the things that I have been saying very clearly now is that anybody, anywhere, who has any investments in paper, stocks, bonds, IRAs, 401ks, treasury bonds, treasury, all of that, is supporting the infinite growth paradigm. And what I'm asking people under 30 to do is to ask their parents, do you have any stocks, bonds? And if you do, mom and dad, why are you trying to kill me? Because it's so clear now that in order to maintain profitability, as these last disastrous earnings reports came out, as I predicted they would by the end of June, triggering what we have, Cisco Systems, for example, laid off 30,000 workers to show a profit. So if you have a 401k and you're rooting for your 401k, you're rooting for 30, 50, 100,000 people to lose their jobs so that you can show a profit. The first thing we have to do, I think, as a moral spiritual issue, is to disengage and not have anything to do with trying to keep that paradigm alive. We have to kill that first, and I'm not sure what we do after that, but killing the infinite growth beast is the first priority. And there again, I come back to the stuff that Ron Paul is talking about, because in my second book, Confronting Collapse, which came out right after the movie came out, you know, I made it very clear that everything has to be done now to empower local governments to reverse the flow, and that's what Ron Paul's all about. That's what the libertarians are about. And so I am seeing an evolution of consciousness in which libertarians, zeitgeisters, transition movement people, people who follow me on Collapse Net, we are all starting slowly, but it's speeding up, to sing the same song. And so we have to have that one voice working for us before we can do anything else. This beast is going to kill us.
Okay, we have Louis on the line.
Hello, Mr. Rupert. I have several questions. One of the things I noticed that Bucky Fuller had said years ago, that he thought our social consciousness was about 10,000 years behind our technology.
Yes.
And I'm beginning to see from some of the statements that you're making and some of the things you see that it also goes for some of our soft technologies in a way, and our financial approaches. That idea of infinite playing field was never been really true. The only thing about life that we've noticed that's been real is it's an open-ended experiment. And you just got through saying, you know, you see things happening, you're not sure where it's going. A lot of the games we've been playing that Bucky called obsolete games are closed-ended experiments, and life doesn't work in those, and the process, and a lot of our behaviors are ending that way.
Well said.
My little disagreement about Apocalypse is I agree Apocalypse talks about the greater truth, but it also talks about change. It's not an ending as in a finality.
No, that's true.
It's an ending and a change in a system. Secondly, I'm not sure, and that's the other question, too. I'd like to know your idea of the water table being hit by the meltdown, I'm not sure if water exactly is broken down into hydrogen and oxygen. I think it's more of a really violent steam explosion with a lot of radioactive products that take place on a water table, and a huge one, because the water table, more than an actual radioactive or chemical reaction that takes place, it's more of a mechanical reaction that takes place. But most of the stuff I agree with you on, it's just that the aspects I see that we seem to be saving, where I believe in people as a populace, is that we've got the Northwest and several cities like Detroit, New York, in which people are growing their own gardens, are working to do their own, getting in touch with their own food production, as well as food itself within the inner cities. Is there going to be a saving grace with that to a great degree, in which it won't be as much of the a dystopic collapse that I hear from you right now at this point, and
well,
I'm through at this point?
Okay, two things. First of all, with regard to the China syndrome, that scientific fact is well established. There are two outcomes possible, or eventualities possible, one of which is what you described, which is the steam explosion, but it is clear science. If you go look in Wikipedia, China syndrome, or you look at the science, it is possible if the core reaches sufficient temperature to separate the atoms, and that's scientific stuff that I didn't make up. I'm not, you know, that could happen. But it's bad enough now that we had videos and very clear reports from Japan, from Japanese news sources, that steam was venting, much like the deep water horizon, all the cracks around the seabeds. Radioactive steam was venting all around Fukushima from cracks in the Earth's surface. That's as a result of the steam pressure. And it hasn't produced a steam explosion, but it is breaking the Earth apart, and that all depends upon the temperature of the core. Now, with regard to the way I look at it is this. I believe Mother Earth is recovering from a long binge, and I believe she's trying to restore balance. And I believe that in the consciousness that is emerging, CollapseNet's in 66 countries now, so there is globally, clearly, a consciousness moving dedicated to living in balance with the planet, the resources, and all life on the planet, not in dominion. And I talk about building lifeboats, which would be one house, but I see arcs forming, which is groups of lifeboats in particular regions, like scattering seeds around the planet. And I believe enough of those are scattered so that no matter what happens with collapse, this new consciousness that is emerging, post-petroleum human, as I have called it, will survive. It's like scattering seeds. Some will land on good soil, some will land on rock, et cetera, et cetera. But I believe there's enough of these arcs forming and building around the planet that the consciousness itself will survive. That's the way Darwinian deselection works.
Well, let me ask you, Mike, we have a few minutes left. You've been talking about Saudi Arabia, you know, how precarious they are.
Yep.
And I've got this book from 1994 called The Rise, Corruption, and Coming Fall of the House of Saud by a fellow named Saeed Aburish. So, I mean, this is not new, but how imminent do you think something like that is?
Well, it's not just Saudi Arabia. But why Saudi Arabia is so critical is that it contains 25% of the known recoverable oil on the planet, period. The whole region is going very, very unstable right now, largely in a tug of war between the East, that would be Iran and China, and the West, Europe and United States over Syria, but which is allied with Iran. That's a balance of power issue. And then you have Israel also under severe external stresses. We've just posted a whole series of stories last night about we're on the brink of a major global war. As a matter of fact, an Israeli general just said WMD will be used in this conflict. So the whole region is unstable. As I wrote in Crossing the Rubicon 7 years ago, it's pretty clear that the U.S. has had a plan to partition, to balkanize Saudi Arabia because their oil's in the East. But our empire is getting its butt kicked all over the world, from Afghanistan to Pakistan to Iraq. Are under an immense deadline to have all troops out of Iraq by December 31st. Muqtada al-Sadr with the Mehdi Army is ready to go to war. He said he will go to war if all U.S. troops are out. And now the U.S. is down to, well, we're going to leave 3,500 troops plus 8,000 private military contractors in the embassy. So that whole region is just ready to go FUBAR right now.
Okay, I think our last caller is Michael. Good morning.
Hey, How you doing, Mike? Thanks for being on the show, and I look forward to seeing you speak this week. My question is pertaining to something you mentioned about you being a police officer in the past, and I'd like you to speak to the rapid militarization of the police force at home and how people, the cultural meme needs to shift away from a reliance and a trust of the state as it is now to one of defense against the militarization of our police here. And if you could speak to the role that police currently play and are going to play in the protection of corporations and the state in this during this collapse, and as the collapse worsens and becomes more apparent for the average citizen of the planet.
Well, I made this very clear with the passage of the Patriot Act at From the Wilderness, my old newsletter, and Homeland Security. The only priority under Homeland Security and Patriot Act is to protect critical infrastructure. I have to emphasize that. Yes, the police are being increasingly militarized, and I think they're being victimized. They're being squeezed. I do draw a line between local police forces, or most of the people in local police forces, who I believe will come to view themselves as our neighbors and obligated to protect the people where they live, as long as police departments stay functioning. Remember that we're in an age of massive budget cuts. We have seen police departments chopped in half, in some cases eliminated entirely. And again, we come back to that point where we're ultimately, what we have to plan for and to prepare for is taking care of ourselves, and that is so hard to get through people's minds. It is very clear that provocateurism is out there with the British government, with our government, that they would like to provoke massive civil unrest so that while they can, they can clamp things down and go to the next phase. The passive non-violence with all other kinds of protests thoroughly on the table, aside from violence, is the way we have to go. And here I should point out, as in the last seconds here, that there is a great Gandhi-like leader emerging in India, Anna Hazare, who has brought the Indian government to a halt a couple of times with fasts. And we need leadership like that right now. I think ultimately, in the long run, though, our local police will find themselves to be and recognize themselves as our neighbors. It's the federalized or state agencies that we're going to have to watch out for being heavy-handed.
Okay, I think we'll have to end it there. We've been talking with Mike Rupert, who will be speaking Sunday night at the First Unitarian Church. Check out his website, CollapseNet. Thanks a lot for being with us, Mike.
Fair, had a great time. I'm looking forward to giving you a big hug when I see you.
Okay, see you Sunday.
Bye-bye.
Stay tuned for Air Cascadia.